Drama on One.
Sundays at 8 p.m.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.
You're listening to RTE Radio 1. Drama on One is offered as a podcast at rte.ie/drama on one and on the RTE Radio Player app. The James Joyce Foundation in Zurich came into existence in 1985, completely by coincidence. To commemorate the 65th anniversary of James Joyce's death in Zurich on January the 13th, 1941, Ursula Zeller, Ruth Frainer and Fritz Sen from the James Joyce Foundation shared their stories with Kevin Reynolds. This is James Joyce in Zurich.
Turn right on Augustinicus, then in 10 metres. The destination is on your right.
This is now the only building in Zurich that really has a plaque about Joyce's stay here. In diesem Haus wohnte der irische Dichter James Joyce von Januar bis Oktober 1918. Er arbeitete hier an seinem Roman Ulysses.
There was no doubt about it. If you wanted to succeed, you had to go away. You could do nothing in Dublin.
Joyce is the best writer Zurich ever had.
And I give over your bloody cotton, Joe, says I. I was thirsty, I wouldn't sell for half a crown.
We are now in Friedhof Lunten and we are walking up to the grave of James Joyce.
The resurrection and the life. Once you are dead, you are dead. That last day idea. Knocking them all up out of their graves. Come forth, Lazarus. And he came fifth and lost the job.
We're sort of an outpost of Ireland here.
Arrived at Ursula Zeller's home.
Hello.
Kevin, Ursula.
Ursula, how are
lovely
you?
Lovely to meet you. Pleasure. Welcome.
Thank you.
To the Joyce Foundation in Zurich.
Now,
this is my colleague Ruth.
Hello.
Ruth. Kevin.
How are you? Nice to meet you. So, what shall I do? What can we do?
Okay, first we say hello to Fritz.
And yes. Hello, Fritz.
You seem to be equipped well, huh?
I just start immediately.
One day in the National Library, we had a discussion.
My name is Fritz Sen. I'm from Zurich, born in Basel, but I grew up in Zurich. I'm now 96. I'll continue for as long as I can when I'm still compos mentis. It's also a social institution. Now, people come, it's a second home, huh?
A noiseless attendant, setting open the door but slightly, made him a noiseless beck.
This place, it's a fairly small place. It used to be a bourgeois apartment, an old building in the old part of town. The foundation houses one of the largest, if not the largest, research library on Joyce. It comprises nearly 10,000 books and journals. And the core of this library, about 2,000 books, are from Fritz's private Joyce library.
What is this she was? Barmaid in Jury's, or the Moira, was it?
So the foundation's history started in the 1970s, and it started with a Cold War story. There was this hotel on Dame Street, Jury's Hotel, which was demolished in the 1970s, and part of its interiors were put to auction. Among them, Jury's antique bar in late Victorian style, one of the precious parts of that hotel. And a Swiss guy took part in that auction, a man named Albert Bachmann. And it was actually him who won the bid. So he purchased it and shipped it to Switzerland. And Albert Bachmann was an interesting figure, rather dubious character. He was an officer in the Swiss army, in the military secret service, actually. And he was also a fanatic Cold Warrior. So out of fear that the Soviet Union might invade Switzerland or start an atomic war, he made plans for a Swiss government in exile. And apparently he read in an American newspaper that the south of Ireland, Cork, was the safest place in Europe. So he's looking for a place, and eventually he found this estate, Lisard Estate. He purchased it, but he did not do so in his capacity as a Secret Service officer. He did it privately, and he got some friends on board, and so it was all paid privately. But then it came to light in the late 1970s. He was exposed. It was quite a scandal in Switzerland. And he was immediately, of course, fired. So he went into early retirement and he returned to Ireland, to Cork, to this art estate. And he died there in 2011.
He was an Ireland fan. Huh? I think had fantasies like the Russians would ever come, he would have to govern in the hotels like De Gaulle, you know.
So Bachmann purchased the interiors of Jury's antique bar. They were dismembered and numbered and shipped to Switzerland. So what happened here in Switzerland? He tried to sell it to some restaurant consortium or to some chain or other, but that failed. So we asked, actually it was the precursor bank of today's Union Bank of Switzerland, Schweizerische Bankgesellschaft. They had actually managed the whole transfer, so that was the connection. So the then CEO of UBS, Robert Holzach, he liked the story and he decided, okay, the bank will buy it and reopen it here in Zurich as an Irish pub to be called James Joyce Pub. And this is actually where Fritz Zehn then enters the picture. At that time, Fritz, of course, it was known in Switzerland as the Joyce expert. So they got him on board and asked him to write a brochure with some basic information on James Joyce. This was meant as a present to the patrons of the pub. So it reopened in 1978. And Robert Holzach was very interested in Fritz's career and his, you know, a Swiss man dedicating his entire life to the study of this Irish writer. And then Fritz Zehn lost the job at a prestigious publishing house here in Zurich, Diogenes Publishing House. So he was looking for something new. And of course, he had been in touch with American and other universities. And one of them was interested in buying his Joyce collection, his private collection. When Robert Holzach heard about this, he thought, well, wait a moment, we should keep this in Switzerland, make it accessible to the public and transform it into a foundation. It still took several years to realise these plans. On the 9th of May 1985, the foundation was officially established.
It's the best Irish exports, booze and literature.
Good puzzle would be cross Dublin without passing a pub.
The pub came first because the bank, in a good moment, and a rare moment, they wouldn't do such stupidity nowadays, they set up the Joyce Foundation here.
My name is Ruth Frenor, and I have been working at the foundation for 39 years, since the very beginning. And apart from that, I was a university teacher, so this was a kind of a balance for me. And I have now the last month in my time at the foundation, so at the end of September, I will go into pension.
I first heard of Joyce from my professor, Professor Straumann, who had interviewed him. And then when I was in London as an exchange student, I didn't have much money to travel, but I thought I'd try this book, which was supposed to be a difficult book to test my English. It was also supposed to be a dirty book at that time. It was not easy to get in Ireland. And I tried to test my English. My English wasn't good enough, but somehow I got hooked. I don't know why. And I stuck and occupied myself to it, went into it, got some background books. There weren't many at the time. It's not too easy. It's probably difficult for an Irishman to understand that somebody of such importance is not supported by state. I mean, Joyce is the best writer Zurich ever had. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've just got here through Paris from the sunny southern shore. I to Monte Carlo went just to raise my winter's rent.
In 1904, Joyce decided to leave Ireland. As we know from this Dubliner story, you have to leave Ireland if you want to succeed. So he decided to leave and he was looking for a job on the continent. And he applied at the Berlitz schools and he got this telegram, appointment in Zurich, go Friday. So within a few days, he had to leave and he asked Nora Barnacle, whom we had just met a couple of months earlier, to join him. And she just said, yes, I'm coming with you. Which was, of course, rather unusual at that time for a woman to leave her country, her family, with a man who just didn't have, you know, any professional prospects, who she wasn't married to. So they went together and they came to Zurich, but this turned out to be a miscommunication and it turned out that the job at the Berlitz School was in Trieste. So after just a week staying at the Gasthofnung, they moved on to Trieste and they stayed there for more than a decade. They had two kids, Giorgio Joyce in 1905 and Lucia Joyce in 1907. And when the war broke out, Joyce, the Irishman, of course, was still a British citizen. And Trieste, being then still part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, was on enemy territory. So he was an hostile alien. That's what these people were called. So we had to leave. So he spent the years of 1915 to 1919 here in Zurich until the end of the First World War. And he wrote the first half of Ulysses here. After the war, Joyce decided to leave Zurich and he and his family moved on to Trieste. They stayed there for a short while and then left for Paris. Their friends had urged them and invited them. This was the place to be, the Roaring Twenties in Paris. And there was this big, vibrant expat community in Paris, artists, writers, painters. So he stayed there for the next 20 years and the family left after the German invasion of Paris. They left for Saint-Gérand-le-Puy in the unoccupied part of France. But still, of course, you know, you never knew what's going to happen next. So his friends urged them to come with them back to the US, the Jolleses. And Carola Gideon-Welker, his Zurich friend, then urged them to come back to Zurich. And they did not want to leave Europe because of their children, especially because of Lucia, who was in an institution in Paris that was evacuated to the coast in Brittany. So they decided to come back to Switzerland, and that turned out to be fairly difficult. Unlike the First World War, the immigration policies had become very restrictive. And it was again Carola Gideon-Welker and other friends, among them the Swiss composer Ottmar Schoeck, who helped to raise some money as a kind of warranty for them so that the Swiss taxpayer didn't have to take care of immigrants like Joyce. Yeah, and then he came back to Zurich via Geneva and Lausanne in December 1940. They were celebrating Christmas with the Gideon-Welkers. And on the 13th of January, he died of a stomach ulcer. He was buried 2 days later in Fluntern Cemetery.
I will appear to you after death. You will see my ghost after death. My ghost will haunt you after death. Get up. Last day. And every fellow mousing around for his liver and his lights and the rest of his traps. Fine damn all of himself that morning.
We are here at Flunton Cemetery. This is the cemetery where Joyce and his family are buried. This is a memorial grave and it was installed in 1966. Joyce wasn't originally buried here in this very place, but he was buried further down in a normal grave for Zurich citizens. And these graves are usually reclaimed after 25 years, but obviously the memory of Joyce should live longer, and therefore the city of Zurich donated the plot for a reinterment. The American artist Milton Hebold was commissioned by Lee Nordness, owner of a New York gallery, to design the statue. Next to Joyce lies Elias Canetti, another major writer who lived in Zurich. We have here the family tombstone with James Joyce, Dublin, 2nd of February 1882. Died in Zurich, 13th of January, 1941. Then Nora Barnacle Joyce, born in Galway, 25th of March, 1884. And she died in Zurich on the 10th of April 1951. Then George Joyce, or Giorgio Joyce, as he was actually christened, born in Trieste on the 27th of July 1905 and died in Konstanz, Germany on the 12th of June 1976. We have Asta Osterwalder Joyce. She was Giorgio's second wife and she was born in Munich and she died at Konstanz on the 17th of June 1993. Next, we have yet another member of the family, a close member, and that is Lucia Joyce. This is not a grave, but a memorial plaque here because she was buried in Northampton in North England. And she was born on the 26th of July 1907 in Trieste and died on the 12th of December 1982. This memorial plaque for Lucia was in fact commissioned by the government of Ireland, the president of Ireland, and was installed here because Lucia could not be buried with her family members.
A tiny coffin flashed by.
Sad. A child.
The dwarf's face mauve and wrinkled like little Rudy's was. Dwarf's body, weak as putty.
He was supreme. I mean, I don't use superlatives, but as a handler of language, he is quite unique, certainly in the last few centuries.
Hot mock turtle vapour and steam of new-baked jam puffs roly-poly poured out from Harrison's. The heavy noon reek tickled the top of Mr. Bloom's gullet.
Ulysses is it's endlessly fascinating. And I think, by the way, that Joyce really used it as a challenge. He was slapping some complacent faces, you know. I can do it like that. And it's never done before, so there you have it.
This plebeian Don Juan observed me from behind a hackney car and sent me in double envelopes an obscene photograph, such as are sold after dark on Paris boulevards. Insulting to any lady. I have it still.
Feeling its wake too, but too much we still don't understand and... So I don't feel capable. I can say a few clever things about it.
Hey, mister, your fly is open, mister.
We organize things. I mean, we do readings every week. We read George's works. We have workshops. There are scholarships. You can come here for 2 months and it's paid for. Yeah, now, of course, that we exist, we're really part of it and we're one of the strongholds.
Urbane. To comfort them, the Quaker librarian purred.
And we have we not, those priceless pages of Wilhelm Meister, a great poet or a great brother poet?
Now, here are some of our special treasures from the Wiederkehr Vogt bequest. Professor Alfred Vogt was a well-known ophthalmologist. Joyce had serious eye problems and he was nearly going blind, and he had more than 10 eye operations, and most of them were unsuccessful. So with Zurich friends, and in particular, Carola Gideon-Welker, but Martha Fleischmann too, recommended to Joyce to come back to Zurich and have his eyes operated on. So in the end, he decided to do it. It was a fairly risky thing because Vogt had developed a new technique. So he came here, and in the spring of 1930, Joyce was successfully operated. So he owed his eyesight, actually, to Professor Vogt. Professor Vogt was a very special person. He had a great interest in the arts as well. So he would never ask his patients, who were artists or writers, to pay in cash. He asked them for a first edition or a valuable book or a painting. And at the donation ceremony, his grandchildren told us that they have a substantial arts collection. And they were all kind of payments of medical fees from his patients. He actually received 8 books from Joyce. And the most precious one is this first edition of Ulysses that he gave Vogt after the eye operation.
Mr. Bloom turned over idly pages of The Awful Disclosures of Maria Monk, then of Aristotle's masterpiece.
Crooked, botched print.
The shopman let two volumes fall on the counter.
Fair Tyrants by James Lovebirch. Know the kind that is. Sweets of Sin? More in her line. Let us see.
He read where his finger opened.
All the dollar bills her husband gave her were spent in the stores on wondrous gowns and costliest frillies. For him, for Raoul. Yes, this here. Try.
The monetary value of this first edition of Ulysses is 250,000 euros at least. And this is because it is a signed copy which also has a dedication to Helen Falk, to someone. Joyce rarely wrote a dedication. He signed his books, but he very rarely wrote a dedication. So this is one reason why this one is so valuable. It has an inscription to Helen Falk, James Joyce, Whitsuntide, 1930, Zurich. Helen Falk was Professor Falk's daughter. She had an interest in English literatures. She knew English, which was unusual at that time for a young Swiss woman. So the dedication is to Helen Falk. And at the bottom of the title page, there is a note in pencil in Professor Falk's hand saying, 7th of June 1930. A present from the author 3 weeks after the operation. He, Joyce, said to me, Professor Falk, you are lucky, you're getting the very last copy of the first edition, first printing. The 11th printing has just appeared. The fact that Joyce was parting with the very last copy of the first edition, first printing, just tells us how immensely grateful he was to Falk, who gave him back his eyesight.
An attendant from the doorway called,
Mr. Lister, Father Deneen wants...
Oh, Father Deneen, directly.
Swiftly, rectly, creaking, rectly, rectly, he was rectly gone.
Well, another very beautiful item is this portfolio, Poems Penny Each, Joyce's second poetry collection. It was first published by Sylvia Beach in 1922 at Shakespeare and Companies. This edition is the first English edition, and it was published by Fine Arts Press, or actually by two presses, printed in France, but published by Desmond Harmsworth, London, in conjunction with the Obelisk Press. This is probably more an art item or an art object than a book to read. It consists of 6 loose handmade sheets on which the poems are printed in the facsimile of Joyce's hand. Ours is number 23 out of only 25 copies. So they are hugely valuable. But what makes this edition particularly interesting is that it is one of 3 collaborations of Joyce with his daughter Lucia. Lucia developed her own style inspired by medieval illuminations and also by the contemporary Art Nouveau, the fin de siècle art style. The title page is Poems Penny Each by James Joyce, initial letters designed and illuminated by Lucia Joyce.
Lucia was in an institution in England, and so she never came. But I did write to her, invite her to South Africa. I knew she couldn't come. And she wrote back very nicely, I'm sorry I can't come, you know.
Dearest Papley, thanks ever so much for the lovely birthday present. It suits me splendid. Everyone says I'm quite the belle in my new tam. I got Mummy's lovely box of creams and I'm writing. They are lovely.
So it's nice to have a letter. Of course, you can't leave these things around. You have to pull them out when somebody comes. But it's amazing. And actually, nobody really has probably looked at all pages.
Probably not, no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now we should do something about art and illustrations and things.
Yeah, keep these valuables in the bank safe. Course, yeah. Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But of course, then we have to go over there and bring it for visitors.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we simply don't have the safe, you know, safe space here at the foundation for exhibitions.
An exhibition room.
That would be wonderful. Yeah, absolutely.
P.S. Excuse bad writing. I'm in a hurry. Bye-bye. M.
We have Pablo Inkberg's translation of Joyce's poetry into Argentinian Spanish. We have a Turkish translation of a portrait of the artist as a young man, Chinese translation of Ulysses, one of two. And of course, we also have the Gaelic translation of Ulysses, published in installments, in booklets. The Gaelic translation was done by a team of translators around Seamus O'Hinnigan, and it was published, or these booklets were published in Belfast.
And there was a fellow with a ballyhooly blue ribbon badge spiffing out of him in Irish. Go up, fly, hoolock entertainment, don't be talking. Ireland sober is Ireland free.
The third item from this collection is a first edition of Finnegan's Wake, published in 1939. And it is actually a special edition, limited to 425 numbered copies. And it is signed by Joyce, writer's copy for Frau Helen Wiederkehr Vogt, Zurich. James Joyce, Paris, 4th of May, 1939. And he signed it in green ink. Here we have, from another bequest, we have Joyce's and Nora's identity card in pink. Monsieur Joyce, écrivain, signed by Joyce. And there is a photograph of Joyce in profile. And likewise, a photograph of Nora. And here we have Joyce's marriage certificate. Joyce and Nora got married in 1931, and it was issued by the Register Office in London, James Augustine Aloysius Joyce, age 49 years, condition bachelor, rank of profession, independent means. And then their address at Campden Grove, 28. Father's name, John Stanislaus Joyce, rank or profession of father, government clerk, pensioner. And here are some items from the Hans Janke collection. Hans Janke was Joyce's step-grandson, George's stepson, from his second marriage to a German eye doctor. There's a collection of letters, more than 100 letters, from Joyce to his son Giorgio and to his daughter-in-law Helen Fleischmann. I like this one. It's a personal note. Please keep tea and something to eat for me. I'll be back at 5 sharp. Giorgio and Helen, please wait. Babbo. Signed by Joyce. That was his family name. Babbo. Daddy. It's a very nice snapshot of everyday life at the Joyces. So here we have cards, also from the Janke bequest, postcards written by Stephen Joyce to Giorgio, to his daddy. Dear daddy, I went to Vichy to see Nonno and Nonna, and I had tea with them. Love and kisses from Stephen. And it's also signed by Joyce, and of course the address is written by Joyce.
This is Joyce's death notice. It was published in the Neue Zürcher Zeitung. Heute Morgen um 2 Uhr starb im Rotkreuzspital unerwartet rasch unser lieber Mann, Vater und Großvater James Joyce in seinem 58. Lebensjahr. In tiefer Trauer Nora Joyce, George Joyce, Lucia Joyce, Stephen Joyce. Stille Bestattung im Friedhof Allmend, Fluntern. Mittwoch, den 15. Januar.
Before Nelson's Pillar, trams, slow, shunted, changed trolley, started for Blackrock, Kingstown and Dorking.
We are now on a city tour for the haunts of James Joyce. We are going to the Bahnhofstrasse, and we are also then going to see the Kaufleuten, where they had the English players perform the importance of being earnest. And then we will go to the Carlton Elite, which was the hotel where Joyce stayed whenever he came to Zurich in the 1930s. He would have come to Zurich in the 1930s for eye operations with the famous ophthalmologist Alfred Vogt. And that was very important to him, of course. And so he stayed mostly in the Carlton Elite. Now it is the staff restaurant of UBS. So Ursula and I, we go for lunch very often here. And we have now come to Universitätsstrasse 38,
Well, actually, these two houses, number 38 at Universitätsstrasse, just above Zurich University, and the other a few blocks further down on the road, these two houses are probably the most important Joyce addresses in Zurich, because Joyce wrote the Zurich half of Ulysses here in these two apartments. He started, of course, in Locarno, and then he resumed his work here in Zurich. And Joyce came to this place from the Italian part of Switzerland, from Ticino. Nora and the family had spent the winter of 1917 and 18 down there in the sunnier and warmer part of Switzerland. And they moved to this apartment in January 1918. They occupied the entire first floor, so they had, for once, they had a fairly large, spacious building, bright and clean and all that, as compared to the ones they had down in Seefeld near the lake. Both Joyce and Nora kept complaining about the darkness, the scruffy, you know, dirty places, and Joyce didn't have enough room really to work there, so we would often go to cafes to work. And now they had more space, the four of them, and they could also receive guests. And this is where he started or resumed writing the third chapter, Proteus. And in this building he wrote chapter 3 to chapter 8. He wrote the first version of Proteus, Calypso, Lotus Eaters, Hades, Aeolus, and Laestrygonians. And down at Universitätsstrasse 29, he started to work on chapter 9 to 13, Scylla and Charybdis, Wandering Rocks, Sirens, Cyclops, and Nausicaa.
Miss Douce turned to her tea aside.
He sighed aside.
Ah me, oh my.
He greeted Mr. Dedalus and got a nod.
Greetings from the famous son of a famous father.
Who may he be?
Mr. Dedalus asked. Lenehan opened most genial arms. Who?
Who may he be?
He asked.
Can you ask? Stephen, the youthful bard.
Dry.
We had Stephen. He was, in a way, the opponent, the enemy. He wasn't easy to get along with, but in some way we did. He had decided early in his life that he would live in the genitive case. And that had certain consequences, and he thought that he was the last of the Joyces. He always said, I'm a Joyce, and not a Joycean. He was difficult to deal with. He was a sort of always in the opposition, he always used copyright, as is cultural, you know. He could refuse copyright or make it so expensive that it was. But I sort of got on well. We had a sort of sparring, he liked to fight a bit, and he did not like the kind of open flattery. Stephen inherited all the genes, but not the genius.
Well, speaking of Joyce's grandson, the Janke collection also contains some autographs of Joyce poems, fair copies in Joyce's hand, and some are typed. And here we have the poem Exequer that Joyce wrote in 1932 to both mourn the recent death of his father and to celebrate the advent of his grandchild. So this simultaneity of grief and joy is the topic of this letter. Joyce really had a soft spot on his daughter-in-law, Helen Fleischmann. There are letters which he ends with a special section to Helen, and there is even a kind of mocking hymn to Helen, lift up thine eyes, O daughter of Jerusalem. This is how it starts. And here we have this occasional short poem, to Helen, who complains of thinness. Yeah. It's a kind of a limerick. There once was a prodigal daughter who spent slightly more cash than she ought to, doing nothing by halves. Now she wants fatted calves, but I'd hate to be there when they brought her. Signed, James Jokes. And what we have here are single or double line entries, notes for Finnegan's Wake. They come from a very early stage of writing. And as you can see, he crossed out lines in crayon, in red or blue. And we know that those that he crossed out were used in later stages or survived into the published book. And the ones that aren't crossed out were abandoned. When the Janke papers surfaced in 2005 and were donated to the foundation the following year, they made quite a stir in the Joyce world because these document an in-between stage between these notebook entries and first narrative versions of Finnegan's Wake. And actually, Hans, we knew him just from a few visits. And he still loved to speak Swiss German because he had spent some years as a child and as a youngster here in Zurich with his mother and his stepfather, Giorgio. So he came a couple of times, but we didn't know him well. And then one day in 2005, he contacted us and said, you know, I still have some papers from Joyce inherited from my mother, and I would like you to have a look at them and assess and evaluate them. But don't expect too much. It's mostly just personal documents, everyday, you know, notes, nothing special or important. And then when that suitcase arrived, and it just arrived by regular mail, there was no insurance, there was no customs declaration. It was just like a simple parcel, you know. But I suppose that was the best kind of disguise for such valuable materials. We were, of course, all hugely excited. We couldn't believe what we...
Yeah, it was a historical moment for us because it catapulted us into another league of research libraries because we had a substantial bequest directly from the family. One other major part of this bequest was the collection of the beach letters that she sent to Joyce because they had been for a long time forgotten. Nobody knew where they were, and they turned up in this bequest. And so Ursula and myself, we actually formed a project very early on to edit the letters, but it actually took us, in the end, 10 years to get the whole job finished. Stephen Joyce claimed at least part of the bequest, but we had our lawyers, which was a connection still from the bank, who actually helped us to get out of this. Obviously, Stephen was impressed by our lawyers' plaidoyer, and he never then tried to actually lay hand on the bequest afterwards.
Oh, don't be talking. He's a caution to rattlesnakes. He's in there now with his law books, finding out the law libel. He has me heart scalded. Wait till I show you.
Well, we never went to court, or he never went to court.
I mean, he was impressed that we had good lawyers at hand, and therefore he felt that he would lose any case.
Yeah. And he had a fight with Hans Janke, too. He said that Joyce's step-grandson wasn't entitled to part of the inheritance. And then they eventually made a deal and it ended up with Stephen being the only copyright holder. So they didn't share the copyright. So Stephen, unfortunately for the Joyce community, Stephen then owned the copyrights on all Joyce materials, except for the unpublished material. That was more difficult, actually. Mm-hmm. And the situation is such that the owner of the physical object needs to publish the materials to obtain copyright. So this is what the foundation did a couple of years after we received the Janke materials. We collaborated with the National Library in Ireland and had them published online. So they are now accessible on the NLI's website. They are part of their Joyce papers, but they are defined as a separate unit, the Hans Janke papers at the National Library of Ireland, or the James Joyce Foundation's Hans Janke papers at the National Library of Ireland. So that moment, when they were published online, the foundation also obtained the copyright.
There is no money involved in having the copyright now, but we can actually tell somebody that
it is not lawful to use the material without our consent.
We met Stephen a couple of times when he came to Zurich en route to his holiday home in the Swiss Alps. Or he would come for special occasions as well. For instance, he attended the Joyce Symposium, or part of the Joyce Symposium in 1996. And he kept coming back, and especially for the launch of, we have a small booklet published by a Swiss publisher who publishes children's books. They published The Cat and the Devil, the story dedicated and written to Stephen Joyce. That was the last time I think I saw him. He was already had his walking stick and, yeah, he was getting older. But he kept calling us and he would never announce his name. He would say, hello, this is Ursula Zeller, James Joyce Foundation. And he said, oh, and then... Of course, I recognized that sound after a while, and I said, oh, hello, Mr. Joyce, how are you? And then he would start chatting with us in Swiss German. His Swiss German was excellent. Mm. Yeah.
It's difficult to actually describe Stephen Joyce. He had his probably nice sides, but he also turned out his nasty sides, because sometimes he would not allow things that would have been perfectly acceptable, but he would not want to have maybe a scene turned into a play or something. So actually a lot of creative writers had their problems with Stephen James Joyce.
Stephen would also veto theatre productions of Joyce's works, or he would say, sure, you can have it, but you have to pay 70 euros per minute. Well, that was that, of course. That's... Mm-hmm. That's a way of saying no. Yeah, but of course you could also see that he had a difficult childhood. Definitely could. And we have a letter written in the 1950s to, is it Carola Gideon-Welker? And when he is referring to his mother, he uses the word only in inverted commas, in quotation marks. So Stephen Joyce had a difficult childhood.
Giorgio is a kind of non-person. He has a good profile. He didn't say much. I still remember when we were here on a Bloomsday, and I said, oh, let's send a telegram to Dublin. He said, I'm damned if I will. I don't think it's easy to be the son of somebody else. So he was a singer, but didn't do much. He was drinking, I believe. He was hanging around in the Kronenhalle.
Carola Gideon-Welker, Joyce's Zurich friend, recalls in an interview that Giorgio Joyce once said to her that my life would have been easier and better one if my father had been a butcher rather than a famous writer.
I knew Frank Budgeon. He came to Zurich every summer. And I still remember once at his talks, people asked him, did you like Joyce? And he could have said, oh, we were the greatest of friends. And he thought for a while, really thinking and weighing the pros and cons, and said, yes, I did like him. And you could see it wasn't an easy friendship. Joyce wasn't an easy person to get on with.
Mulligan is a contaminated, bloody, double-dyed ruffian by all accounts. His name stinks all over Dublin.
He was difficult. He was resentful. He was easily offended.
I won't have a bastard of a nephew ruin my son, a counter-jumper son. I'll tickle his catastrophe, believe you me.
Joyce was buried in Flunton Cemetery near the zoo. It was a consolation for Nora that her husband should be able to hear the animals roar from his grave, as he was very fond of lions.
Sulphur dung of lion.
Young, young.
I am tired of my voice, the voice of Esau. My kingdom for a drink.
He entered Davy Burns.
Moral pub.
And they beheld him, even him, Ben Bloom Elijah, amid clouds of angels ascend to the glory of the brightness at an angle of 45 degrees over Donahoe's in Little Green Street, like a shot off a shovel.
That was James Joyce in Zurich. You heard the voices of Ursula Zeller, Ruth Frainer and Fritz Senn from the James Joyce Foundation. The excerpts from Ulysses were from the 1982 RTE Complete Recording, which is available along with a trove of Joyceana on the Drama on One website. With special thanks to Martin Mulheim, Goretti Slaven and Kevin Brew. Sound supervision was by Ruth Kennington. The producer was Kevin Reynolds.
rte.ie/drama-on-one